Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. Once again, we got the full crew with you tonight, starting off with my man, JR. What's going on, man?
What's going on, man? One day closer to game day, so I'm good.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And up next, everyone's favorite puppy father, Miles Gorham, fresh from puppy school. What's going on, my man?
Oh, man. It's going good, man.
I don't believe you, man.
You shouldn't.
Was Teddy not behaving today?
Not today. He just was not feeling it today.
All right. Well, you have to work on that, man.
We're working on it.
And last but certainly not least, we got the Saxy Prince. I think he might have just woken up from a nap. So as time goes on, hopefully get the energy levels up. I'm sure once we start talking about Case Keenum, he'll get back in there, get that blood pumping, be ready to fire off some of those takes. But what's going on, Sexy Prince?
Yo, what's going on, y'all? It's been a good day. You know, just got back from work a few hours ago and just been relaxing. Just need a day of break, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, you go down there and run with them young boys again?
Can't handle me, so...
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to switch it up a little bit today, and we're actually going to get JR's random question of the day. So, what's going on, QB1? What you got for us?
So, it's a pretty random question. If you could give the Vikings one thing for Christmas or one gift for Christmas, what would it be?
Oh, boy. Well, I feel like we're just going to go ahead and you know, kill the lack of suspense. Yinka, what would you give the Vikings if you could give them anything for Christmas?
I would give them a quarterback. That's what I would give them. For Christmas, I would give the Vikings. I would give them no injury luck vial. So everyone on the team takes it and they're all not susceptible to getting injured.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Prince started talking about magic and his Comcast just cut right on out. So Prince would give him the gift of staying healthy. Miles, how about you, man? What would you give the Vikings if you give them anything for Christmas?
So Christmas, this means I give him the number one seed heading into the playoffs.
Like it. I like it. JR, how about you, man? What you giving him?
A guaranteed spot in the Super Bowl.
Boy. All right.
Oh, see, I didn't know we could go that far.
I didn't know we could be bold. Like, can we just give him the Lombardi then?
That's right. Yeah. Like for Christmas though, like Christmas a little early.
Yeah.
So they just get to skip the playoffs and just wait for whoever makes it through.
Yeah, get out of jail free card.
I think I like JR's the best, yo.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, unless we're just gonna take it a step further and just, you know, they win and we just get to fast forward to the parade, I'll take that too.
Yeah, that's fine.
You guys coming up for the parade?
Shoot, I might come down.
You would have to, like, real for real.
We all staying at Miles' house though.
Yeah, I see it on TV.
Hey man, y'all see that thing though where Cleveland, they got permission to do a parade if they go 0-16?
The anti-Super Bowl parade.
That's the parade right there. You know that parade will be off the chain if we go to that one.
Oh,
Cleveland,
yeah,
will be partying like there's no tomorrow if they do that.
I'm about to say, I think they'd be more drunk than the one here.
Absolutely.
Josh Gordon is going to go so wild.
That's messed up.
Prince,
man.
Now stop that. Prince, stop it. Stop it. All right. Well, hey, Josh is on the straight and narrow, slippery slope. You know, you can't start with anything. So Josh will stay at home and work on routes or something during the parade.
Oh.
Well, let's keep this thing moving right along. So a couple topics we wanted to get to before we get to this game preview here. And so we don't need to take too much time digging into these, but there's been a lot of talk over the last couple of weeks here about the Vikings offensive line and how good they actually are. So many in kind of the Viking fan world now say that because of, you know, where we are and what the offense has been able to do, the Vikings offensive line is now an elite unit. So like top five type unit. Not giving up sacks. The running game has still been, you know, at the surface, pretty good. JR, when you kind of look at things on film, I guess, what are your thoughts on where the Vikings' offensive line is overall, and what's your take on kind of where you'd rank them in the league at this point in the season?
Well, obviously, they're much better than last year, but it all goes back to Case Keenum's ability to avoid pressure. I think he's helped them out a lot, and that's the biggest difference we're seeing from this season as opposed to last season. He's obviously more mobile in the pocket than what Sam Bradford was, and he has the ability to duck and avoid pressure within the pocket. But overall, I think they'd be in that 12 to 16 range, right around league average, just because I think Keenum masked their deficiencies a lot in the passing game. They're still letting a lot of guys free off the edge and up the middle from time to time, but he's able to compensate for them by making those guys miss within the pocket and create and extend plays. We saw it last week where the offensive line really struggled picking up twists and stunts up front, but Keenum was able to avoid that pressure, and he was able to extend plays. So I say in the 12 to 16 range, from the run game perspective, I think they are a lot better, but we are still seeing where they're still having some plays, some negative plays, and where they're only getting 1 to 2 yards at a time. And then a couple plays later, they get a big gain, like 30 or 40 yards. So I would like to see them block it up a little better. There's still too many runs where they're getting negative runs or 0 to 2 yards, and that's why I can't put them in that upper tier right now. So I think they're right around league average in that 12 to 16 range.
Awesome, man. Thanks. And Miles, what about you? When you're watching, what are your thoughts on kind of where they rank now? Are you kind of in that same range as JR? Do you think they're a little better or a little worse?
We're talking about them. Sorry. Better or worse than win? Sorry.
So JR kind of had them ranked in that like 12 to 16, right around kind of league average-ish type range. Are you kind of there as well, or do you think that the unit's even better than that just based on what you've seen from them?
I'd say slightly above average. I'm not going to say that. I don't think they're probably a top five unit. I think they'd have a hard time competing against a lot of other teams, but I think Pat Shurmur's just done a really good job of scheming toward his players' strengths and knowing what, you know, what his players do well and what they don't. And making sure, obviously, he throws in some wrinkles in there that don't always work. So that's sometimes where you get the negative yardage plays. And he tries to get too cute at times. You know, obviously, we saw the first matchup against Detroit where the offense was driving down the field and they decided to run the Wildcat with Jerick McKinnon. And then on that play, there was a fumble. So, like, little things like that are things I'd like to see, which we haven't really seen too much of. Shurmur do anymore, which I think is good, because I think he needs to get away from some of that and kind of just continue to build on the success that he's already having. I'd say overall, I think the offense is above average. I'd say probably more in that like 8 to 10 to 12-ish range, because I think they're scoring at a lot better rate. They're averaging a lot more points per game. The run game, according to some of the statistics, Latavius Murray's not all that efficient, but I think overall it looks like from the numbers, the rushing attacks a lot more efficient. Like you guys had touched on, the sacks and the pressures have gone down, and Case Keenum's ability to move around in the pocket and avoid some of those pressures have definitely really helped. And then you have the weapons on the outside, you know, Phelan and Diggs and Rudy up the middle. A lot of those guys are making plays for the quarterback. So I would say they're in that above average range, in like 8 to 12 range.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And then Saxy Prince, yes, you know, last but certainly not least, what are your thoughts on where the O-line is now and kind of how the rebuild has gone and where you'd rank them versus the other O-lines in the league? Also, Saxy Prince, why are you laying on the floor?
Man, I think you guys have realized by now I'm just a unique dude. And, you know, I'm either a drive-in or I'm on the floor. You know, I'm upside down. So I just trying to give you guys something a little bit different. You can't expect anything from the Sexy Prince. You just got to come into a situation all the time just expecting the unexpected.
To paint the picture for y'all who can't see Prince right now, he is laying on his floor in his room with some weights while he's on the pod with us today. So he's getting his swole on while he's out here, you know, giving us the takes. So continue, Yanka. My bad. So I'm trying to cut you off.
No, it's all good. To answer your question, I think I agree with Miles, and I put them probably in that 9 to 13 range. I think
you probably couldn't just like go with the 8 to 12. That would be 9 to 13. Like,
anyways, 13. And I think the biggest, obviously, the biggest improvement that we've seen and why this offense has, it's weird to say, been taken to such a huge level is, I mean, we've had 3 years of TJ Clemens, we've had to sit 3 years of Matt Khalil. And to finally see a guy who's stable at the position, who has very competent play, who's allowing Case to be able to do things like step up into the pocket, knowing that his backside is protected for the most part. I mean, I think it's astronomical for what he has done, has helped as far as his offensive line. I think also the athleticism that you're seeing, being able to move a little bit more laterally, maybe, you know, the holes created in a more unique way, whether it be zone runs or, you know, just the intelligence that you have on the interior, basically having three centers be your guys. I think that's what's kind of propelled this unit from just being, you know, just horrid the last couple seasons and then propelling them into, you know, kind of that upper echelon as far as offensive line units. I can't take away credit from Keenum because I think he has done a stand-up job when it comes to there are still times where this unit does break down. You know, you have some issues with, you know, speed rushers sometimes getting in the interior on stunts. Easton sometimes will get beat. Elfline, I think he's still growing, and I think it really helps having Berger there. But overall, I think this unit has taken a step forward, and I think it's a huge reason why this team has taken, offensively, has taken such a huge step forward to being, weirdly to say, a top, you know, kind of top five or at least top 10 offense. So I've been impressed, and I think that those are some of the reasons why.
All right, so we got a 12 to 16, an 8 to 12, and a 9 to 13 range for the offensive line. That's all fair here. So we're going to go through this next one a little quickly. It's a question, can't remember if it was Miles or Prince asked earlier today, but you know, one of the things that I've seen quite a bit is, you know, you're on Twitter, and this is kind of usual sports fan talk, is that, you know, fans wanting to build the Vikings up, so they're kind of trying to tear Philadelphia down and what they've done, and looking at Philadelphia's resume and saying that they're only 1-2 or 1-1 against teams with winning records, and so the Vikings have played tougher teams and have done better. And so, you know, as we kind of look back on where we've gone thus far, and, you know, obviously we got some tough matchups ahead, but we'll go through this quickly, and we'll start with you, Prince. I guess, how many quality wins would you say the Vikings have so far this season? And then what would you kind of peg as our best win? I think I feel like I know where most will go for the best win, but I guess, you know, how many quality wins would you say that we really have on the books at this point in the season?
I would say quality, too. Yeah, this was the question I saw on the timeline, so I posted it to you guys. I would say quality wins two games. I would say would be the Rams and the Lions. Probably our best win being the Rams, just because of the way that we won. We actually beat a really, really good team, and we beat a more commanding type way, you know, having the score being what it was versus some of these other teams where you really felt like the Vikings were at times, you know, you felt like they were the better team, but they were kind of down to the competition, but it always took a while for them to really, you know, take a hold of the game and win the game. So yeah, I would definitely say Lions and Rams, and then Rams being the more that solid win that I felt really good about for the season.
All right, Miles, and what about you, man? How many quality wins are you chalking up for the Vikings this year? And I guess, are you riding with Prince there with the Rams being you know, the best win that we've had so far this season?
Yeah, I'm going to say three quality wins. I do think the Rams was the best quality based off of how hot both teams were coming in, and how well the Rams offense was playing. I think they were the highest scoring offense in the league at the time. I don't know how much that's changed since, but I know at the time when we played them, they're the highest scoring offense in the league, and we held them to 7 points. So pretty commanding win there. But I would add to what Prince said with the Rams and the Lions, I would say that the Saints, first game of the season, so it's always different to compare what, the first week to, what we're now week 12. But I think that was a great win just for the fact that you see what that team turned into now and how good they are now. Being able to, we got lucky to catch them at the time we did, but I'm still going to chalk it up as a quality win because they still have people like Drew Brees. They have, the run game that they have with Mark Ingram. I'm not going to even say the name that they had before they got rid of him. But, they had guys like Michael Thomas, and then on defense, they have like Cameron Jordan, who was just named Defensive Player of the Month for November. And some of those really quality, high quality players. And so to be able to, to beat a team like that when we did, I just think it was a really good win. So I'd add the Saints to that too.
All right. And JR, what about you? How many quality wins are you chalking up for the Vikings in terms of kind of the opponent and how we handled our business when we went out there and played those teams?
I got to go with 1.5. The half being just because I think they played a good half against the Lions. I didn't really like the second half that they played against the Lions on Thanksgiving just because I thought the offense got really vanilla and they let them back into the game. So I really didn't like what I saw there. But the Rams was a statement win. I think they dominated that game. So I'll go with 1.5.
Are the Lions good, though?
I mean, yeah. I think they are. They're a quality division opponent. They've been our kryptonite for years, and I think it was really good to see them dominate them in the first half. I just would like to have seen them play a complete game and just dominate them in the second half, and they just didn't do it.
Yeah, I guess when you put it that way, it makes a lot of sense. The Lions really aren't that good, but they really have been that team that seemed to have our number for the last little while there. So
Go ahead.
With that context, it makes sense that we'd put, I guess, that half game on there because, JR, our eternal pessimists and give us half credit. Can you round up for us on that one, But, what were you going to say, Miles?
No, I was going to say, if we're going to kind of go with those, like, I'm not going to call it moral victories, but, like, those quality wins based off, like, the half games and stuff, could we somewhat call, like, the winning in Chicago as like a half point too, just because we, over the last decade, we've only won before this year, what, two times in the last decade in Chicago?
I mean, I guess you could, but
I don't know. I didn't add it, but I'm just asking, like, in terms of that, in that context of,
them being our
kryptonite, like you said, that the Lions have beaten us the last couple seasons.
There's a huge talent gap.
Yeah, I'm skeptical about the.
No, I understand. But even when Chicago's been terrible, we've lost in Chicago. So again, like, we've only had three wins there in the last decade. So that's just why I asked.
The Chicago win, or giving us that half point, just because it's not necessarily just been Chicago that's been the issue or playing in Chicago, but Jay Cutler's kind of had our number in Chicago for years. And obviously I do think where Trubisky is now versus where Jared Cutler was, in years prior, I still think there's a bit of a gap there, which contributed to all those, like, really fluky games. And, he's not the greatest quarterback, but for whatever reason, he had our number anytime we went to Soldier Field. So
what about Rex Grossman and Josh McCown and,
yeah,
some of those guys.
Let's not bring those guys
okay
up into this kind of conversation.
I think what Prince was really trying to say right there is that it was really nice for the Vikings to go into this matchup versus Chicago with the clear advantage in the second half at quarterback, because Case Keenum was out there running the show for Prince's Minnesota Vikings. And so before we, you know, go, we get our guest on, our guests on. Prince, I need to ask you, you've had a little bit of time since the last pod, you know, actually, you know, a couple pods, almost a week now to digest all that's gone on. And, you know, we've been kind of rough on you. We've been calling you a hater here of late, you know, for the nitpicking that you were doing with Case Keenum. But on a scale of 1 to 10, with, you know, 10 being Ice-T at the player haters ball, where are you at right now on the hateration scale with Case Keenum?
Well, basically, if I were to go to Target right now and buy myself a 6-pack, no, a 12 case of a Haterade, I probably would still, you know, have 11 still in there. You know, I drank a little bit.
Man, it's just not Yinka's night tonight. Not his night at all. Yinka started to get in there and tell us how much haterade he had for Case, and once again, Comcast said no.
Goodness gracious,
Yinka.
Yinka,
goodness.
Your internet is on Nathan Peterman mode right now.
You know what happened? Miles came over in the middle of the night, and whatever was happening with him for the last couple weeks, he siphoned all my juice back into his thing. Pause. I know. Whatever, we'll go past it.
We'll delete this part of the pod.
Yeah, we will.
Edit all this out.
Jason will edit all this out. But I would say in that 12 pack, I probably still had 11 still left in there. He just hasn't won me over just yet, you guys. I'm sorry.
I don't even know how to convert.
I've given him his credit.
I don't know how to convert Prince's analogy to a scale of 1 to 10. So I don't know. I guess we'll move this along. Whatever Prince just said, he's still hating probably more than he should be. But we're going to go ahead and wrap this really clumsily executed segment up here and go and see if we can't get our guests on so that we can move this thing along and start talking about the Vikings' next matchup with the Atlanta Falcons. So hold the line. We'll be right back. All right, everyone. Well, we are back. We found our guests, and we're doing things a little bit differently, in part because I'm lazy and was supposed to record 2 podcasts tonight, but they're both Vikings podcasts, and we have a game coming up. We need to preview the Falcons. My friends from the other podcast, Eric Eager and Luke, they know quite a bit about the Falcons because they've been looking at, you know, some numbers and some statistics and things of that sort. So what I figured we'd do, we'd bring everyone together. They can help us break down the game. We can get into it. JR can compare his film analysis to some of the things Eric and Luke have seen in the numbers. Obviously, we'll have Miles and Yinka jump in here, and we'll move through this thing and give you a little bit of a different feel for the Atlanta Falcons preview heading into this game. So let's hop right into it here. My good friend, Dr. Eric Eager, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me on this podcast.
Awesome. Well, we are glad to have you, and we're going to put you to work right off the bat here. Vikings, Falcons, it's looking like a really tough matchup. I know a couple weeks ago I said this was probably our upcoming matchup that I was most nervous about, and as time has gone along here, JR started to dig into the film. He's kind of feeling the same way. That you know, the Falcons' speed on defense, the weapons they have on offense, could really make this a tough game for the Vikings. I guess as you look at things, with not just the PFF grades, but you know, the ELO rankings and everything else, what are you thinking about this matchup, and how do these two teams match up?
Yeah, I mean, we've actually for a while in our rating systems have rated the Falcons pretty high. And I think that, you know, we were a little nervous because they weren't performing kind of, you know, in the win-loss column the way that we expected. But you kind of look at some of the metrics, and they're, you know, some of the better teams in the league in terms of yards per play gained on offense, yards per play allowed on defense. You look at the PFF grades of their defensive players, and they're all seeming to be in like the 70s, 80s, or I don't know if any of them are in the 90s yet, but, you know, they're quite strong. You know, players like Devondre Campbell, the former Gopher, Deion Jones have really turned that defense around. And on offense, Matt Ryan has really, kind of turned it around after a slow start. I think one of the statistics that we saw was last season, almost none of his interceptable passes were caught by the defense. And this year, almost none of his interceptions were interceptable passes. They were passes that were like tipped, things like that. So I think some of those metrics are starting to turn around. I think the Falcons are probably the toughest team the Vikings have left on their schedule.
That's awesome. And so as you're looking at it, I guess, you mentioned that, you know, you guys have been high on the Falcons pretty much all season. I guess as we're looking at the matchup, like your power rankings, where do you have the Vikings versus the Falcons?
We have the Vikings at 6 and we have the Falcons at 3. The Falcons trail the Eagles and the Patriots, and the Vikings further trail the Steelers and Carolina. Carolina is a team that has – you know, we liked last year and lost a lot of close games. And so our prior on them was pretty high. And they've, performed pretty well, I think 8-3. And that a lot of that for the Panthers is despite the fact that Cam Newton's really struggled, but they seem to have picked it up defensively, former Viking captain Munnerlyn making an impact, that kind of thing. So those are the teams. But, as we know, Minnesota could probably leapfrog at least two of them in the next 2 weeks.
That is awesome. And moving things right along to our man, Luke. Luke, man, what's going on, dude?
Hey, good to be here with all you good people.
Are you all packed up and ready to go to Atlanta?
No, I'm going to do that after this podcast.
All right. Well, when you get to Atlanta, go to Magic City and say Yinka sent you, and they'll get you set right up.
Cool. I have no idea what that means in the Wi-Fi. I'm extremely sure.
All right. Sorry about that, Luke. I know that you were digging into some things, looking at some stats as well. I guess, what are your thoughts on this matchup that we have upcoming here with the Vikings and the Falcons?
Yeah, just to echo what Eric said, I was just looking at like the overall PFF grades of everybody, and it's like stud on stud matchups everywhere with Everson Griffin versus God, what's their left tackle's name? I don't know. There's Alex Mack versus Linval Joseph. Rhodes versus Julio is going to be awesome. There's all kinds of
Jake Matthews, matchups. By the way.
Jake Matthews, thank you. All kinds of great matchups. I looked at one thing I wanted to see, like, how are teams attacking Atlanta? And I looked at the last three games because that's kind of the winning streak that they're on. I feel like the last three games are way more representative than, like, their Miami debacle or almost losing to the Jets. And I feel like that's a lot more representative of like what we're going to see on Sunday. So I looked at those games and I looked at how teams are attacking them, and they are almost entirely abandoning inside runs. I think there's only been like 4 A-gap runs according to Sharp Football Stats. 3 of them have been successful, so there's that. But most teams have been going to the edges and trying to get to the edge. And on tape, I feel like that's backed up, that teams have been able to like get running success with like more east-west plays. So that's why I think Sunday's going to be Jets day. I think they could probably go up the middle with Murray if they really wanted to, because I think teams have been able to be successful in the interior a little bit, despite the fact that Dontari Poe is very good. The defense has just given up a lot of run success up the middle. Vic Beasley's having an off year. But yeah, the teams have been very successful. I think 60 or 70% success to the edges. And that's almost exclusively what the last three teams have tried to do. And they've done it to great success. None of that has led to wins for like other reasons, but in terms of like actual run success, I think that's the way to attack them. Plus if Trufant doesn't play, which I believe he's still in concussion protocol, they're going to be way overmatched with Diggs and Thielen up against. I think Brian Poole might not even play either. So Robert Alford and then like their fourth corner.
CJ Goodwin.
Is that who it is?
He was their dime, I think, for a while. But yeah, those injuries in the secondary for Atlanta are going to be troubling for them, especially because their strong safety, Keanu Neal's, he's fantastic, but he's more of a kind of in the box, kind of downhill, hit you, Cam Chancellor type player than he is an over-the-top, help your cornerbacks out kind of player.
One other fun split that I saw was the Lions game, Xavier Rhodes against Marvin Jones. All of the production that Rhodes gave up against Marvin Jones Jr. was in off coverage. And I believe he was far more successful in press coverage. So I would expect to see Xavier Rhodes get very physical with Julio, which is just exciting as a football fan.
Indeed.
And then moving right along, you know, we got some analytics, some numbers-based talking here. But JR, I know that you've been digging into the film and really looking at this matchup. And you've tweeted out some things about really how the team speed of the Falcons is something that gives you a bit of pause as you look at this matchup, I guess. What are your thoughts on how things are going to go? And what were you seeing when you were getting in there and looking at the film?
Yeah, so this is a very tough matchup for the Vikings. I think it's by far the best defense that they have played this year. And me personally, I love Atlanta's defense. I love watching them play. They really remind me of that prime Seahawks defense, especially, you know, with Dan Quinn's background and being that he was a former Pete Carroll disciple. So he's really molded them after that prime Seahawks defense. Very tough up the middle. Like Luke mentioned, Dontari Poe and Grady Jarrett are very good run defenders up the middle. And teams have basically given up on A-gap runs and B-gap runs. So I completely agree with Luke. I think this is a great game to get Jerick McKinnon involved because the Falcons defense has really struggled with short, shiftier running backs. That's because Keanu Neal does play a bit wild and crazy and out of control. He has a lot of Anderson Dejo syndrome that I like to call in him. He plays really wild and out of control when he is coming down from the roof of the defense. And he does have a tendency of missing a lot of tackles on running backs that can create in space. That's why I think this is more of a Jerick McKinnon game as opposed to a Latavius Murray game, because McKinnon does a way better job of being able to break tackles and create out in space. And the Buccaneers did a really good job last week of getting the ball on the edge with Jacquez Rogers, I believe it was. He was doing a good job of getting out on the edge and making those guys miss out in space. Their edges aren't very good. Tack McKinley and Vic Beasley don't do a great job of setting the edge. Their edges are kind of soft. So outside zone runs and a lot of misdirection will be very good against the Falcons. Passing game-wise, they're going to play man coverage. Like I've been tweeting a lot, they're going to play man coverage. They're going to play a lot of cover three. That's their base scheme. With Trufant being down, they'll probably play more cover three as opposed to man-to-man coverage just because they don't have the personnel to match up with Diggs and Thielen. But if they do come out and do play man coverage, I still think they will, despite Trufant being down. Expect a lot of what we saw in the Tampa Bay game, a lot of crossing routes with Diggs and Thielen, a lot of mesh concepts, getting those guys, you know, crossing over the middle just to create some confusion in the secondary. From a defensive standpoint, the Falcons have really been force-feeding Julio Jones. I don't know what really took them so long to do that. Steve Sarkisian has really gotten more in a groove over these past few weeks, and he's done that by revolving the offense around Julio Jones from a passing game standpoint, being very creative. They're putting him in the slot now too, so they're doing a good job of doing various ways of manipulating him and getting him open. From a running game-wise, they like to run a lot of 20 and 21 personnel, like to keep two tight ends on the field, 10 and 11 personnel as well. So a lot of two tight end sets and a lot of two running back sets. That's really the bread and butter of their offense. And they're going to get the ball on the edge. They don't really like running the ball up the middle. They're going to find a way to get the ball on the edge. So this is a big game for Ben Gideon. I highlighted him earlier in the week on Twitter. They're going to try their best to keep the Vikings in their base defense. And I think they're really going to try to copy the Colts game plan from a year ago, just keeping the Vikings defense in their base 4-3 scheme, and they're going to try to attack it that way with double tight end sets.
I'm going to hop in here real quick just because it's we got to know, what are the grades from PFF saying, between this matchup between Case Keenum and Matt Ryan, both quarterbacks who as of late have been playing quite well.
Yeah, I mean, Case Keenum's playing about as well as he's, as you could have expected. You know, we have him as, kind of in that second tier in the league in terms of grades. When he's kept clean, he's also been pretty good. On plays like third and long, he's a little bit down the list a little bit. But I think a lot of the things that we can say negatively about Case Keenum have been mitigated by Pat Shurmur. So, he's created some pressures for himself. So we have him, credited or discredited with like 10 pressures himself, independent of the offensive line. But there always seems to be kind of like an outlet pass for Keenum to complete. And that's why he's only taking a sack on like 5% of his pressure dropbacks, just because there seems to be something good for Keenum to outlet to. He never, you know, Shermer never seems to put players in bad positions. One of the things I think is important to note is, you know, when we talk about the Vikings running game, a lot of the PFF grades for like the Vikings offensive line have not been as strong. And while I think a lot of us, and we talked about this last week on the podcast, I think while a lot of us are pretty impressed with how well the Vikings offensive line has done, I think what we are seeing is the benefits reaped from going from really, really bad to average are far more substantial than going from really, really average to really, really good, right? So the Vikings have made that leap, and we are seeing the benefits of that. But last week against Detroit, Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon combined for -9 yards before contact, and then they got 130 of those yards after contact. And so I think, you know, in terms of like looking at the Vikings and trying to handicap this game, I think if, you know, Atlanta can tackle, you know, even, you know, on the inside run plays, but also on the edge, I think the Vikings running game might have a difficult time just because their offensive line hasn't sort of been there on a consistent basis. But, you know, if that's, you know, if it comes down to Keenum versus Ryan, I think the Vikings are going to be in trouble just because Ryan is really good and we haven't really had to see Keenum play from behind much. But if this game is square, I think that the Vikings will be fine. I think Keenum can more than, account for himself, you know, in a matchup versus the former MVP of the league.
Can I jump in about Ben Gideon?
Of course.
Because I just looked up real quick the production he's had on the year. He has right now mostly played in the run, and he has a 9.2% run stop percentage, which is 26th among all linebackers in the entire league, and way higher than both Barr and Kendricks. That's really good for like a role player. And in coverage, he has not been that tested. He only has 53 cover snaps on the whole year, and he's only been targeted once. But that is pretty good. Like, it's nice that he's not an easy person to target when he does get caught up in the pass. So it'll be probably the biggest test for him on the whole year, just because he hasn't been like really tested in the pass yet. And if the Falcons try to like get us in base and then pass on us and go target Ben Gideon, I'll be interested to see how that turns out. I don't have his grade in front of me right now, his PFF grade, but in terms of production, he's been really productive in his limited role. So I kind of welcome that strategy. It's not going to be like Greenway last year.
I think though that is like kind of the way that offenses are going in the NFL. I think, you know, turnabout is sort of fair play here. If the Vikings continue to put David Morgan in the game as much as they have in recent weeks, Duke Riley's been hurt. I don't know if necessarily if he'll play this week, but they've been using a lot of Vic Beasley on base downs as an outside, like an off the ball outside linebacker, which I don't necessarily know if he's well suited for. I think in that sense, the Vikings could really, you know, they could turn that thing around and be super efficient throwing out of, you know, 12 personnel or even 21 personnel against the Falcons too. So I think we might see a lot of that just because, you know, both teams are relatively unsure about their third linebacker, which I think is a sound strategy. If you're going to slough off, I'd rather slough off at linebacker than at nickel.
Wait, so are you saying that if we had like a plus athletic tight end as a mismatched tight end? Yeah, that would be like an ideal situation in this game.
Yeah,
I mean, blocked by Kyle Rudolph.
Already there.
God, I wish there was like some sexy prince that would constantly labor or constantly ask for that almost on a daily basis.
We don't have one here.
I am. Right?
You guys are awfully throwing an awful lot of shade at Blake Bell.
Who? Oh, the Bell does.
Wasn't he on Nickelodeon at some time?
I don't know what you're talking about right now. No. Okay,
I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready to watch David Morgan rumble for slow first downs.
Spark God.
Jeff Dugan, man.
Oh, man, we're going off the rails. Miles,
we're all going to get blocked.
Y'all are making me miss Allen Reisner. So,
okay, bring us back, Miles. Bring us back. Get us back on track.
Yes. So to jump in for my question, for Eric and Luke, and anybody else that, you know, wanted to respond, this is a kind of a
one of those conversations I never think I'd really – a comparison I really ever in my life would think I'd have to do. But Adam Thielen and Julio Jones, in terms of, like, your metrics and everything for PFF, Eric – PFF, excuse me. How do they kind of stack up this season? Because I know in terms of, like, yards and all the numbers, Adam Thielen's in the top five with guys like Julio and Antonio Brown and DeAndre Hopkins right now. So could you kind of, like, say how kind of Adam Thielen and Julio Jones kind of stack up against each other in terms of you guys' metrics? And then we could even, you know, at that point, jump into guys like Stephon Diggs and, you know, Mohamed Sanu and kind of just touch in the receiving core for both sides in general, but I kind of wanted to touch on the Adam Thielen and Julio Jones.
I mean, in terms of grades, you know, Adam Thielen is, you know, sixth behind, you know, guys like Antonio Brown's first, Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, Keenan Allen, AJ Green. And then Diggs is 12th. So the middle guys are guys like Doug Baldwin, Michael Thomas, Golden Tate, DeSean Jackson, and then Mohamed Sanu is 11th. So, you know, we're going to see, you know, a couple pairs of wide receivers that are pretty good in this game. In terms of some of the metrics, like we have an efficiency stat called yards per route run. And that's basically exactly what it sounds like. And Julio Jones is averaging 3.38 yards every time he runs a route. So I think that speaks something to the fact that they don't play Julio every snap, like a lot of receivers. But he's up there. Second in that metric is Antonio Brown. Third in that metric is Adam Thielen with 2.62 yards per route run. So they're very efficient guys. They're grading well in our system, meaning they're not dropping a lot of passes. And you know, the plays they are making are actually good plays and not just plays the defense gives them. Stephon Diggs is ninth in yards per route run. He's first in passer rating on his targets. So I think, you know, Keenum and Bradford have like a 125 passer rating when throwing at Diggs. So that's pretty good. I'm looking for Sanu. Sanu's, you know, a little down the list in yards per route run because I think he's somewhat of an underneath receiver that does a lot kind of that grades well in addition to racking up yards. But, you know, not a whole lot to, you know, there's going to be some good receivers in this game. And, you know, I haven't even talked about Jarius Wright yet.
Cool. And how about, like, I'm a big, like, Taylor Gabriel fan for the Atlanta Falcons, just in terms of, like, what I think he can do in terms of being a gadget player. He's not a guy that needs a lot of volume to kind of make an impact. Kind of where do you think he stacks up kind of against the Minnesota Vikings defense? Because, for me, I think it could be a worry in terms of a matchup. So I just kind of wanted to see what you guys thought.
Yeah, last season, Gabriel averaged about 2.5 yards per route run. This year, it's about 1.25. So he's been about half as efficient. I think that he's one of the casualties of the move from Shanahan to Sarkisian in this. You know, but I do think – so if you're looking at a Vikings defense, one of the biggest improvements they made from a season ago is that their linebackers and you know, having Harrison Smith in there for the entire season so far – their safeties, their nickels, those kind of things. Those guys are getting to the boundary faster this year. And so swing passes to backs, you know, passes to the edge on wide receiver screens and things like that. They're getting snuffed out by the Vikings better than they were a season ago because guys like Anthony Barr and I think Terrence Newman and Mackenzie Alexander are actually playing better than Captain Munnerlyn did last season. Those kind of things, I'm less worried about that. I mean, what I'm worried about, frankly, is Julio Jones popping off a few big plays. I mean, to me, that's where, if you are a Vikings fan, that's where, you know, the game could, you know, turn around really quickly for you, is if Julio Jones gets up over the top of Xavier Rhodes or whomever's covering him.
I also want to talk about Thielen in the slot, because right now he's second in the league in yards per route run from the slot behind your boy Miles Keenan Allen. And Mohamed Sanu is actually ninth in that stat, so he's been effective out of the slot too. And I don't know if that is a better thing for Julio or a better thing for Thielen, because it means that, like, the Vikings have been using Thielen to give him mismatches, which is part of what has, like, led to his production, because a lot of his big plays, like, you'll find out he was, like, matched up against a linebacker somehow. Teams keep letting that happen. And Julio's been going, you know, on the outside against whoever the defense wants to put up against him and outproducing everybody in terms of yards per out run. So I guess that means that from like a raw talent perspective, that looks better on Julio, but Thielen, I guess, is a more versatile tool.
Yeah, that makes phenomenal. That makes a lot of sense. I have to touch on that, Luke, about you talking about Thielen and getting lined up against linebackers. And do you think a lot of it has to do with how the Vikings kind of line up in a lot of 11 and 12 personnel? And a lot
absolutely,
more.
Yes.
And Thielen's, I think, I don't have the number in front of me about percentage of snaps, but I know it's pretty high for him. And, you know, when there's only a one wide receiver set, it's usually always Adam Thielen. So kind of a tight end split out wide and then, you know, putting Adam Thielen in the slot, or, you know, having two wide receivers out there and making sure Thielen's in the slot. So keeping these teams kind of like what we talked about, where what it sounds like Atlanta's going to try to do against the Vikings and keep them in their base package. I think the Vikings have kind of done that to a lot of defenses too, with Pat Shurmur and keeping opposing defenses and base packages. So then they're getting linebackers and safeties lined up on Adam Thielen. And that's, you know, that's a mismatch all day.
It's one of my favorite things about Shurmur this year is he'll go out in like 12 personnel, but put both wide receivers on one side of the field, have Adam Thielen line up in the slot. And yep. Then you either have an outside corner playing in the slot, or you have a linebacker or a slot corner on Adam Thielen. 53% of his routes have come from the slot, Adam Thielen's, to answer that question.
That's awesome.
It is amazing to me as we're sitting here that we're actually having a conversation that is a legitimate conversation where we are comparing Adam Thielen and Julio Jones. That's wild.
That's what I'm saying. It's crazy.
It's crazy. But to go on to our last main topic for tonight, Jaron, I'll start with you. As you kind of have been breaking down the film on this one here, what are your keys to victory for the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, the first one is the Vikings receivers have to be able to beat man coverage. If they are unable to beat man coverage and they allow the Falcons defensive backs to control the game and they're unable to get off press coverage, I think it's going to be a long day for Case Keenum, simply because – I mean, we know he's a guy that can run around and create on his own, but against this defense, it's going to be extremely hard to do that just because they have so many good athletes at every single level of their defense. I mean, if you're running around trying to create with Deion Jones probably spying you this game, it's going to be very difficult for him to just create like we've seen him able to do against other defenses. I just don't think he's going to be able to do that consistently against this defense. So the Vikings receivers are going to have to be able to beat man-to-man coverage. I think another key for the offense is they have to somehow establish the running game on the perimeter against this defense, because if you can't run the ball against this defense, you're not going to be able to just consistently throw it on them. And that's considering or assuming that Trufant is going to play this game. But if Trufant doesn't play, I think it's a huge blow for them. On the other side of the ball, the Vikings defense has to find a way to control Julio Jones. You're not ever going to completely stop him. I think if they can limit him to 75 yards, I think that can help them tremendously. Devonta Freeman is expected to be back. Tevin Coleman is going to be back. It's going to be interesting to see how they share the workload between those two, because Freeman is a more between the tackles guy as opposed to Coleman, who's a guy that they like to get on the perimeter. So if they can control Julio Jones, I think they can shut down the Falcons running game.
Awesome. And then Eric, bring us home on this one here. I guess from your perspective, when you're looking at things from a PFF grades or the matchups on PFF, I guess, where are you seeing maybe the biggest areas that we'd be able to exploit to see a Vikings victory?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things JR said, it, you know, the running backs for the Falcons, you know, they bring, you know, not only explosive plays in the run game, but also in the pass game. So I think this is a big game for Eric Kendricks. Who's, you know, been banged up kind of this week. A big game for Anthony Barr. You know, he's had a pretty good bounce back season, but we haven't seen him tested as much this season with backs that have those kind of abilities. You know, I think one of the things that Atlanta has struggled with, even though I think that they have, you know, really talented linebackers, is they really struggled defending passes to the running backs. And so I think this might be a game where Jerick McKinnon, you know, catches 7 to 10 passes and is a you know, big time player that way. And you know, Kyle Rudolph, you know, that's going to be a good matchup with him against Keanu Neal and Devondre Campbell, Deion Jones. because I think that Atlanta is going to put whatever they have into stopping the Vikings receivers. I think that that's kind of the narrative right now, is that Case Keenum is not the one necessarily moving, moving the ship forward. It's more, the air yards are being generated by contested catches by those two guys. So I think Atlanta's going to really put resources towards that. So it's going to be the ancillary pieces that come to play for the Vikings if they indeed win.
Well, awesome. Well, the last thing that we do on all of these, especially when we're doing a game preview here, is that we have you give us a bold prediction and a score prediction. So I'm just going to go across the screen as it's showing up on my screen. So I'm going to start with you, Eric. What is your bold prediction for this game? And then what is your score prediction for the game?
My bold prediction for this game is it's going to go under the 47.5 Vegas over under. That's my bold prediction. I think both of these teams, as we've said today, are going to try to get into base offense and run the football. Try to slow the game down. I think both teams are afraid of the other team, and when that happens, you play with a slower pace. So I think 47.5 might be a little high there. And so for me, I'm thinking, so the Vegas spread is about 3. I'm thinking it's probably, Atlanta is, like we said, we have them a little bit higher power rating. I think, probably something like, 23-19 Atlanta or something along those lines for this game.
All right, moving right along. Sorry, here.
I don't pick the Vikings every time. It's hard. It is hard to watch.
You won't be alone on this pod, because we got JR coming next, and he's known to be a Vikings pessimist when making his pick. So JR, what's your bold prediction and your score prediction?
I'm a realist. That's what I like to call it.
Coach.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I don't feel good about this game. Just watching their defense on film, I don't feel good about Case Keenum being able to execute in this game. So I'm going to go 27-24 Falcons. And my bold prediction, I think they struggle against Julio Jones. I think he gets 150 receiving yards.
Woo! Okay.
That's aggressive.
That's aggressive. I like it, though. I like it. It's bold. Luke. Bold prediction, score prediction. What you got for us, man?
Boy, we're going to be a bunch of pessimists here, because I agree with JR. I just don't like the way the Falcons match up with us. Like, I think back to what I was talking about with the Rams game on the other podcast that I do, the Purple Journal. I was like very optimistic about that matchup, because I just liked what they did well was what we defended well. And I don't think that's the case with Atlanta. I think that they are just too talented, too far across the field, and are going to be able to pick on even the smallest mistakes that we make. So I'm going to go with something like 23, and I think it's going to be sort of hard to score points. So like 23-17 Falcons. And I'll just copy-paste my bold prediction from the other podcast, which is that even though we lose, Diggs and Thielen are both going to outproduce Julio Jones.
Okay. All right.
I don't believe in the Falcons secondary.
I kind of like that one, Miles. I mean, you're generally our optimist. Are you gonna get us back on track here, or are we just gonna keep with this pessimistic theme going along here?
I almost feel like I have to get back to the optimism. No, I'm going to, just because I have a really hard time. Just not that I don't think that the team can't, obviously can't lose, but I'm gonna say the score is gonna be 30-21 Vikings. I'll get back to the optimism. And then my bold prediction, I think both Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon they both have over 75 yards rushing. Is that bold enough?
We'll take it. We'll take it. And Saxy Prince is up and about and ready. Bold prediction, score prediction. What you got for us, man?
Still on the floor, though, so I'm actually going to probably hop into this pessimism pool that we've kind of created, and my bold prediction is both Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are held under 40 yards receiving,
And as far as score, I will go 24-23 Atlanta.
How are we scoring any points?
I was just about to ask that. We about to score 23 points.
The Jets game.
Y'all act like those are the only two people we got on offense.
Jerry's about to go for 200.
Yep. It could be all Jerry.
Tree pity.
Kyle Rudolph, 12 catches, 35 yards, touchdowns. 2 touchdowns.
PPR stud.
That's a Kyle Rudolph stat line.
For me, I am going to go with a bold prediction that we win this game on a late missed kick.
I thought you were about to say Atlanta Falcons. Bold prediction that we win the game.
No. We're winning. We're going to get like kind of get back for, you know, the game we don't like to talk about. But like they're going to line up for a chip shot to win it, and they're going to miss it to give us the win. And yeah, we're going to win 21-20. I don't know how we got there, but that's how we're winning. So I guess, that's pretty much covers the main topics. I guess we'll run through rapid fire in the reverse order here. Let the folks know what you have coming up that they should be looking out for. Prince, what you got?
Well, I dropped an article yesterday. It's a very unsexy Prince-like article. It was I Still Believe in Teddy Bridgewater.
Oh, you said unsexy Prince. I thought it was going to be a shout-out to Case Keenum.
Yeah, I mean, if that was the case, it would be very sexy Prince-like. But, yeah, I dropped it on Daily Norseman. You can go and read that. I just kind of get my thoughts as far as, you know, there's still a section of us that you still believe Teddy Bridgewater can still come in and be the quarterback for this team. But even with that belief, you know, we still support the current quarterback, which is Case Keenum, and yeah, just make some arguments over there.
Can't wait to read the comments section on that one. Miles, what you got going for us?
Let's just say that
I don't know yet.
We'll give you a pass. You know, you're raising a young child that's going through some things right now. So
he's he's finally sleeping. So
you crack a beer and celebrate, man.
That's the plan.
And Luke, what you got either going for us or what's dropped recently that our listeners should look out for?
Yeah, if you head over to purpleptsd.com, you can check an article that I wrote about if the Vikings can win a playoff game with Case Keenum. I looked at the last 5 years of playoff games and like what winning quarterback efforts look like, and then how many times Case Keenum has accomplished that. And just to give you a sense of like if we enter the playoffs with Case Keenum at quarterback, how confident you should feel. You can also catch me on the Purple Journal podcast that just dropped this Thursday morning, I believe. And during the games, if you follow Purple PTSD on Twitter, you can find me live tweeting them, except this coming one, which I won't be live tweeting because I'll be in the stands.
They got Wi-Fi at the stadium. It's a very nice stadium.
I can't be on my phone that much. I'll be at the stadium.
Yep, yeah, that's right.
It's true.
I get it. And you can't get Chick-fil-A either. So
I was just going to say.
No, you have to wait for one of the soccer games to get some Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, because he's getting back for the soccer game.
Yeah, well, you know.
Is the sphincter going to be open?
I have no idea. Mine certainly won't.
I mean, if the Vikings get up 21-0, who knows?
If we get up to a 28-3 lead, yeah, I'm going to be sweating.
Oh man, JR, what you got going on for us? Anything we should be on the lookout for?
Nothing upcoming. I did drop my Reading Between the Lines scouting journal a couple weeks ago. So go check that out up on Climbing the Pocket if you haven't already.
Cool. And last but certainly not least, Doctor, what you got going on for us, man?
Well, we have the PFF Power Rankings are up on the website. Tomorrow morning, we'll have the PFF spread picks. I can already tell you guys that Atlanta, Minnesota will be one of those picks. And given how I answered the last question, you guys probably know, it'll be not a fun Sunday for me because I'll have to, you know, I'll be unhappy either way. That's basically, you know, going to be up. In addition to this podcast and the one that we have, My colleague George Shahuri and I we record with Steve Palazzolo and Sam Monson. We record one of our picks on the PFF podcast. So that's basically what I'll be doing when this is done. So I'm looking forward to kind of crunching the numbers and picking our best picks for the week this week.
And you just brought something up there that reminded me of an offhand conversation I had with somebody about, like, when you are, you know, looking at something or looking at the Viking season and you're running analysis and you look at something and it spits out, oh, it's, you know, likely that, you know, Case Keenum is going to regress to the mean or something like that. Is that like is that an emotional thing? Like, are you worrying about it, or is it just kind of the numbers say that, so that's just kind of is what it is? Or like the numbers say that, you know, things are going to get better for the team. Does that kind of infuse optimism in it for you? Or is that just more of a clinical, this is what I'm looking at, this is what the numbers are telling me type of thing?
Well, like 2 weeks ago, we had the Vikings covering against the Rams. And I was very into that game, because when you pair, you know, your picks that you print that get graded and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, one of your two favorite teams is playing, you're fairly into it. We had one with Kansas City playing Dallas, and we were on the wrong side of that one. And I was very into that game too. But yeah, I mean, like for example, a couple weeks ago, we printed, like, you know, the best offenses by our rating system, and Atlanta was first. And, you know, we knew we were going to get heat for that because, you know, Atlanta had been struggling. And so it does give me, you know, I do root for Atlanta to do well because I want to see our rating system do well. So that is clearly a thing. And so that's important for us. So I do sort of root for us to be right. But at the same time, and this is why, you know, it is really hard to, like, you know, have rooting interest, is like you also have to make sure that you learn from being wrong too. And you don't, like, you know, if Atlanta, let's say Minnesota covers this weekend, like, I'll be happy because the Vikings covered, I guess. But I'll also try to look for reasons why I was wrong about the Vikings versus Atlanta. And try to, you know, see if we can't provide better analysis next time.
Awesome. Thank you. And thank you for the rest of you guys for hanging with me here while I ask this random question to Eric, while all of you, I'm sure, are ready to get on with your night. So with that, I will go ahead and wrap things up here. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast, featuring the Pocket Protectors, I guess we'll say. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason, joined by Eric, JR, Luke, Miles, and the Saxy Prince. Thanks for listening, y'all.
CTP.